Tuesday, November 13th for the airport committee meeting.
And I forgot to put the approval of the minutes on.
Yeah. So we've got two people that can... I wasn't here, so there's only two of you, so...
Two things I noticed in the minutes, and I didn't make it home before I came here.
Here, you want a copy?
Yeah.
And then, is there an extra copy over there?
Yeah, these are all there. Extra right there.
Oh, I'll take those.
No, that's
fine. Oh, these are agendas.
This is not minutes. This is something.
Oh.
Here, go ahead and take.
Well, you have a whole bunch of them. You were keeping them.
Did you want minutes?
I just put it in my file.
Okay, let me know what they are.
Something to do with the remote communications outlet. She put something in here. Where did it go? Down here, the third bullet in the report on FDO.
Okay.
Down here, it says, the letter had been sent to the FAA in regards to remote communications director. That should be remote communications outlet.
Outlet, okay.
Outlet, yeah.
And just so you know, that letter has not gone out. It's still requiring one more signature, but that's all it's waiting
for. Oh, so it should be a letter will be sent?
Yes. The letter has been drafted.
That's right. You need all the documents.
We got the mayor finally signed off on it last week. Now we're just waiting on the chief pilot for AmeriFlight. But I'll talk about that.
And then what about the other one, Ralph? You got another one?
Oh, I thought there was someone with business licenses, and that was he's not. He gets it just
those. Any other corrections? Where your motion for approval?
I move to approve the minutes of last
one. Second. Statement moving second. All in favor say aye. Okay. Reported airport operations, Lance.
Alrighty. I think last time afterwards I looked, we were talking about solar panels and stuff like that. It's called the VAIL program, the Voluntary Airport Low Emissions Program. There's two qualifying factors for it. One of them we are qualified under, but we are not qualified under the EPA designated non-attainment or maintenance area.
We have to be in a smoggy area for that.
Smoggy, water polluted, nasty. And I have all the diagrams here, which is funny because Lincoln County isn't, but the one right below us is. So that.
So you have to be both in order to...
You have to have both in order to qualify for the VAIL program.
Yeah. And that was an FAA program?
Yeah.
Okay.
So more smog, more pollution.
Yeah, so Ralph, if you can get in your Mustang and start cruising around more, that would be I'll help out with my dog. Terry, you need to start driving that diesel.
That diesel.
Yeah.
Lots of smoke.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean that, you know, won't change in the future. It's out there. For now, maybe something to just kind of keep checking in on is fine. The guys are almost done with the storm drain. They got the 48s. We had to call in Vern to come and put some more rock down on that road to the 48 because he was sinking in that muddy area. So Vern will get that rock, and they hopefully will start finishing that up by the end of the week. I mean, he's up there now. They'll hopefully get it rocked tomorrow. For them to drive that jetter truck in there, but they got their fire hose and they're hooking that up to get it down there. So,
are you on the west end or east end?
They are on the west end.
So, okay. Oh, so,
the yeah, outlets.
Yeah. That's kind of okay. I get that.
Yeah. But that's the last bit that they have to do, and that will hopefully be done depending on when that can get rocked. Tomorrow morning at 10, we have a walkthrough.
Right.
Is there any report of an outcome of all that? I mean, did they find that things drained better than they thought, or worse than they thought, or more?
They found about 2,000 more feet of pipe than what we had even mapped. So they did find some questionable areas, which we've already had Ted come out and look at, and we're waiting for further direction before we get that.
Yeah, all this is going to be wrapped into the pre-design report. For the runway rehab, and I mean, was about 27,000 feet of sand or storm drain that they've TV'd,
yeah.
And
well, they haven't even done the 48th yet. So, but they're 2,000 feet above the 27,000 mark right now, and when they do the storm drains,
okay.
So that they found more pipe. We're not; it's all pipe that drains. It all has functionality to it.
And some doesn't drain so well.
Yeah.
We'll find it.
Well, yesterday when Lance was gone, we had a pretty good rainstorm. I went down and pointed out to Lance the 48 pipe that usually just has a small stream coming out of it was 50% filled, and it was a river coming out of that. And I'm pretty sure that all of this cleaning that's been going on is starting to finally pay off. The water is actually flowing through, and man, was it coming out of those 48s. And how they're going to send a body up that pipe, I don't know.
Well, I was talking to them about it, and they're not sending anybody into the pipe. They have this little tiny industrial sweeping machine thing that they're going to send up.
Drive in there.
Back.
But it is working. The drains were really flowing yesterday like they have never since I've been there four years.
What did it get received into?
Coming out of the Grand Creek.
Got a big pit there.
Yep, and then it looks like a... Out. Well, no, it's a regular creek, and it's got rock and stuff.
And there's another pipe going under the 101, which flows out into the ocean.
Do we risk overloading the pipes, the culverts they put into 101?
You know, it's funny that you bring that up, because last year when the 101 sloughed off, remember that when the 101 sloughed off? What had happened was that pipe couldn't handle the capacity at that point that our 48s were putting out, and it bubbled all of the sandy area around that, which is what caused that collapse. Mm-hmm. Whether or not that was an ODOT issue, whether or not they updated that or what they did there, I couldn't say, because that pipe is their responsibility.
Use any diligence at all in sizing the culvert beneath 101, it should handle. I mean, Grant Creek hasn't changed. And what's contributed between the two outfalls at the airport to 101 is insignificant compared to what was already there. And so, I mean, when they size it, I don't know what size it is, but it should be sized adequately. If not, it's their fault, so to speak. We're not making it any worse, let's put it that way.
that's about where we're at on that, and I don't really have any other...
Can you update them on our light pole that fell down? Plus, they mentioned this happened the last couple of years, and we may have to look at the ones we have there to take them down.
Sure. Yesterday, my day off, poor Terry had to deal with one of the light poles by the box hangers had collapsed, and it fell where the long-term parking lot is at. It fell, I don't know how it managed to do this, but it fell in between the power outlet by 3 inches. Nailed the fence, obviously, and the fence held it up from collapsing onto one of the long-term parking lot cars, and it landed, and it was 3 inches away from the code box. I mean, it was just right in the line of everything. So we do have the fence company coming out tomorrow to fix that area, because there is a security issue with one of the gates there now that bent the pole so it doesn't latch shut. So we have to get that to corrected right away, because it is a security issue. But last year we had another light pole fall off where the apron and the new rotating beacon is at. That fell off into the ravine last year. The year prior to that, there was another one that fell also the same way off into the ravine. So we're down to two lights on the apron, and what we're going to have to do is look at those bases, because they're snapping, they're rusting at the base. Basically, all the bolts and all of the fixtures that attach are there, but the base of the poles are snapping and collapsing. So we may have to look at removing the one by the FedEx building, which would be the other one, and then the other tall one by the box hanger. Now, I am doing some research. I got to read into the ACM and stuff about what we can do about trying to get replacement poles for that area, because obviously at night it's very, if we don't have any lights on the apron at night, it's going to be very, very dark, especially with all the tripping hazards that are around, or, you know, chocks and ropes and stuff that can be sucked up into aircraft. So that we're looking at what we can do to correct that problem. So
two points. Number one, the ones that are standing, if they're deemed unsafe, we may have to take them down, so we don't want them to fall on a person, a building, a plane, or anything, so we'll have to do that. Second thing is, we didn't budget anything for replacement of the unit. We just didn't. So if we can't get it up this year, we'll have to look at next year's budget to put it in. Unless there's something in our ACM that says we have to do that, then we'll just have to look at contingencies or emergency to follow our ACM. So those are kind of the issues that we're looking at.
That hasn't been finished yet, but what I did was, of course, everything happens when the city is closed. So yesterday, before I had any pieces touched or anything, I took numerous digital photographs and then forwarded those on to Jim just to document it for insurance purposes. But when the pole hit the fence, it hit the fence so hard that it snapped all the light fixtures off the end. And they just missed the whole entire keypad. I don't know how it missed it, but it snapped off their three big high-pressure sodium fixtures, and they landed on the ground. Then we had live wires coming out of the poles, so I had to call Doug's Electric. They came out with a big lift, lifted the pole up off the fence to secure it, and got all the electrical shut off. Then we had to take Sawzall, cut the pole into chunks just to get it far enough, short enough, so then we could take the crane, lift it completely off the fence, and then left it on the ground.
What's it made of?
Steel. So, and then they offered to go ahead and cut the rest of the pole up and clean it, but I felt like the money, we have enough staff, we could do that part ourselves. So once I got the emergency handled, I sent them away to try to keep the cost down as much as possible.
So I think insurance will pay for damage to the fence and stuff, but for replacement of the pole, if they start asking, is it past its useful life, we might not get full replacement. Plus, if we look at the existing poles that are standing and take them down, insurance will cover that. So we will submit some insurance stuff, but there's lots of unknowns that just be aware. We'll just work through them.
It might be. We'll have to even look into the Part 77 airspace, because those are towards one of the approach ends of two there, those poles by the box hanger. They're not in the flight path, but we'll have to have somebody come out and survey, because those heights may have changed from when those poles were originally put in.
So we've got an appointment, Lance and I both, we have an appointment with F&W Fence. They're going to come out and at least just get the fence back secure, which is part of our whole 139 certification. So we're going to make sure that part is done. Any further stuff that needs to be done, if it has to go to bid or if we have to get prices on it, we'll run all that through Jim and get his approval. But that's the next step, is just getting the thing out of the way, getting it secured, and then we'll look at the other poles in the next week or so and get a determination that these are safe to leave. But we're not going to be the ones making. We'll actually have somebody that's qualified that can give us a written statement, basically telling us yes or no, and then we'll have it in writing that this needs to be removed, and we can go to the next.
But the two that are left are exactly the same as the three that already fell over.
Yes, they are. They're the big, tall brown poles that have the three old, and it was quite a deal, but we managed to get through.
How old are those, do you know?
No, sir.
I haven't found anything yet. When they were put in, my guess is maybe the late 70s, early 80s.
They're probably 10 to 20 years old.
Yeah, so who knows if they're even...
I don't know if it's possible.
...their service life on the pole, I really don't know.
The wooden poles seem to be doing really well. Steel may not be the perfect, we may be able to look at other options versus just replacing them with an exact steel pole, because...
It'd be cheaper, too.
All of the ODOT has put up all the regular old light poles that come in off the street. All of those are wooden. They're in perfect shape 10 years later, but replacing them with another metal pole, we might want to look at that and see what our other options are.
When that time comes, we'll look at that too.
The PUD has a life expectancy of so many years on poles, and sometimes they have to pull them out early, and the possibility of getting a good pole, and maybe even...
And put it in.
Yeah, they have that. That would be the other thing, is that there's a concrete base. You have your metal conduit in the middle where all the wires are coming up, and then there's a concrete base for the round. It still has the bolts that are in the concrete base, so I don't know if putting a new pole on, you may have to remove those rusted bolts or put a whole new base in. I'm not sure at this point.
Work in progress.
Yeah, work in progress, but we definitely... We realize the you know, the dark ramp is not good for anybody to be running around on, so we're looking into getting it fixed.
Anything else?
No, that's all that I got.
Okay, FBO.
FBO. Well, we purchased our first load of Avgas that we've had in a while. As you guys know, we were able to hold the prices on our fuel level throughout the summer. One of the reasons is because when the price went up, we didn't have to buy fuel. We had enough capacity and enough quantity that we were able to let the prices fluctuate up and down. However, we kept it at the same. We finally did run out. We had to purchase our first load. And because the prices are still going down, after talking with Jim, we only purchased a half load, which was 4,000 gallons. And we're still seeing prices go down, but by holding off and only getting a half load, we actually saved the city quite a bit of money. Now, as the prices continue to go down, I kind of monitor it each day. As soon as we start seeing a little bit of an increase of a few cents, we'll go ahead and pull the trigger and get the tank the rest of the way full. That'll carry us all the way through the winter months, and we should be able to hold our prices steady. On that note, I did receive a red tag notice from Oregon Department of Weight and Measure. When they come out and do all of our inspections, we just had an inspection on all of our self-serve tanks and our trucks, which everything passed. But he goes down to our fuel farm, puts paste onto the stick, sticks it down in the tank. When he pulls it out, we are allowed to have 1/4 inch of water present in the bottom, and we were 1/4 inch above that. We had 1/2 inch of water, so we received a red tag. Now, I was allowed to return the tank to service myself once we had removed the water out of the tank, which we did immediately and returned the tank back to service. I did, however, look into how long it's been since the tank's been cleaned. It's been several years. So I called all of our suppliers, let them know what the problem was. They told me that I do not have to have that tank cleaned. If I can just get that water out of the bottom of it, return the tank to service, then that would be satisfactory for them, which is what we did. And so the tank has been returned to service, and we've mailed the red tag off, and it's already gone back to the Oregon Department of Weights and Measures. But the guy's been really good with us, and he used to call us ahead of time and let us run down and get any water that may be in there right before he comes and does his inspection. But, you know, I really agreed with the guy this time. In order for me to know that I have a problem, I need to document from time to time that I got a problem. So I fully accepted having 1/4 inch too much, and we're talking about a 10,000 gallon tank, so it doesn't have to be very much to change it 1/4 inch, but we were able to get everything out and returned it to service, so it's not a real issue that needs to, you know, be dealt with, but we are on top of it. It is happening.
You have to insert a pipe to go down there, and you have a drain system.
We have a drain system, and that's part of the thing that the supplier asked me to look at. Our part of our daily quality control is we sump those tanks every day. We sump every truck and every tank on a daily basis and document what the condition of the fuel is. We think there's a possibility that the pipe that we're sumping may not be touching all the way to the bottom of the tank. So they suggested before we spend any money cleaning or doing anything like that, let's make sure that that pipe is, that we're doing our hand sumps, is actually touching the bottom of the tank. So we'll be diving into that project here in the next few weeks. But the big thing was to get the tank returned to service, which we've done.
The other thing I want to add to that, both Terry and Lance think it's not condensation that's causing it, possibly some water coming in from all the fittings. So, although it's been looked at in the past, maybe some kind of just a shed over the top, not enclosing it, but a shed. We have to work with the fire marshal to make sure it's okay. But that might be an easy fix in the future. You know, we're not going to jump out and do it right now, but it might be something we can look at next fiscal year, just putting some kind of a shed over it to get that gap.
Yeah. Do you notice the difference in moisture based on the fullness of the tanks, though, that it varies?
Well, a little bit, but, you know, it's, you know, and I fully understand. I mean, it's part of aircraft ownership. They always recommend you keep the tanks full in your airplane because of condensation.
Yeah.
And this is a double walled tank that insulated, so that is not an issue. Our moisture, I can just pretty much guarantee, is coming from when we're having 50 mile an hour winds and 5-6 inches of rain in a very short period of time, driven by these winds. It's finding its way into little tiny cracks. And again, we're talking about a quarter of an inch of water versus a 10,000 gallon tank. So Lance and I last year found, when they had the tank cleaned, the guys installed the bolts with all the threads sticking straight up. So whenever it rained, water would just basically spiral down the threads. So last year we pulled all of those bolts and put special neoprene coated washers underneath the bolts, tightened everything up, sealed everything we could around it. We put 5-gallon buckets on top of the air vents and bungeed those down. I mean, we've taken a number of steps that have helped this problem. It used to be a lot worse, but we've done what we can to get a handle on it. But until we get some kind of roof or something on there, it's just going to be a battle that we're constantly fighting. But you use Avgas. Keeping the fuel quality up is of utmost importance to us. So we take everybody's safety to heart.
The thing you have to realize is that the tank, all the water settles on the bottom. When we're filling the trucks, it takes from the top. So it will not suck the last 1,000 gallons out.
Yeah.
Of the tank where the water sits, so there's no issue that way. It's just that water gets in the tank. It happens. It's very common everywhere. So
especially on this coast.
Yeah, we don't want you guys to feel that you're getting, we don't know if we're getting water or Avgas. It doesn't. The system isn't set up like that.
But I just wanted to let everybody know we are fighting the battle, and right now we seem to be winning. I mean, it nips us a little bit when we have super big storms, but for the most part, it seems to be nice and safe. That's it on the fuel. We had an issue last week. All rental cars were out. We had 100%.
Utilization,
and it's turning out to be very popular, especially when Enterprise promised a car and then failed to have it there when the people, when you get off your jet after spending $10,000 for a one-way flight, you want your car waiting. And so having those cars there has really helped the city of Newport as far as just keeping the customers happy.
And they can't reserve them.
Yeah, they reserve them ahead of time. However, a small issue cropped up. It seems that Toby Murray doesn't accept American Express cards, and every one of the flight departments paid with American Express cards. So I took this to their general manager, and he said, "You're right." He said, "We've got to have American Express to be." And so none of the charges were ran, and 2 weeks had gone by, and I got a call yesterday from Atlantic Aviation, and this last charter that came out of Dallas, Texas, still hadn't closed their books on the flight because none of the rental charges had been turned in that the pilots had used. So that all got handled today. They also delivered their last car out to us, so we now have the four cars. The fourth one was finally delivered, so that issue is now put to bed, and everybody seems happy
and
with that.
Toby Murray takes American Express.
And Toby Murray will take the American Express. So, which is good for their business also. You know, they've said people have tried to buy parts and things like that. And
they keep the cars pretty clean?
Yes, and in fact, any time they come back, it happened today, the cars came back and they were just not really dirty, but
yeah,
you know, people are in them.
Yeah,
we just drop them off down there, we don't do anything. And they'll either bring them back or they just gave me another car and said, here, go ahead and take this back to the airport. When we get this one clean, we'll drive it up, switch, and bring this one back, and you guys don't have to do anything. So they are really cooperating and trying to keep the city from doing anything, basically, other than just giving the contracts out. So, and we will be getting a commission on this, which is nice. I don't know what's going on, but Enterprise is dragging their heels. They're not signing the concessionaire agreement, so that's something I'll follow up with you, Jim, but just so everybody knows, Enterprise is not jumping through the hoops in order to keep having cars out at the airport. And I basically let them know this is something that any person that comes out there is going to have to sign. So they still delivered some cars out there over the weekend, but they have not signed the agreement, and I will be following up on that and letting that go forward. But
so
just so everybody knows.
Enterprise, is this because people have called them directly, or why?
Yeah. They are still listed in all of our, you know, AVL and all the different flight websites, still has Enterprise available. So, you know, we're not ready to cut them off quite yet. They're still providing service to our customers, which report back to the city and things like that. We still want to keep our good relationship, but I just want it out there in the open that they have not signed the agreement yet, and we'll kind of hold their feet to the fire a little bit, but for whatever reason, they just still haven't done it yet.
How do people know Toby Murray's available?
They don't. They just know that when they call in...
They call the airport.
Yeah, they call the airport. And they are asking for a car. Now, I'm pretty sure it's okay for us. I mean, I guess maybe some clarification. I don't know if I can say, hey, you know, cancel your Enterprise, and we've got...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've never done that, but when they call in and ask for a car, if we have one available, we say, hey, we've got the cars here. If you don't want to go to the Enterprise.
Option, but you can't steal the business if they already have
it. Right. But that's going on this week.
Does that concessionaire agreement put any cost on them?
Yes, it puts a 10% commission.
Oh, okay. So
and that's even across the board, all of the... all car rentals are going to have that same commission. So, and that is not something that we just made up. That was something that was agreed upon when COCUS had the FBO. So we're just doing the exact same thing that has been done in the past. We've just changed it from Central Oregon Coast to Newport Municipal Airport. Okay. And that's really it. Just to follow up with Lance, both of us have been pretty busy with this project at the airport. The three-day project has turned into 3 weeks, and they are needing escorts every day. You know, we've been busy. When we are not doing our other stuff, we are kind of walking these guys through, giving them escorts to and from across the runways, across taxiways.
Some vehicles out there.
Well, for one thing, yes, it's a pain doing all the escorting, but it's a bigger pain putting X's and barricades and closing runways and taxiways. So
we'll save that for next year.
Yeah, we don't mind doing it, but we've also let them know, let it be known that, we're ready for this thing to wrap up.
Well, now, did they take this as a firm fixed price contract?
What's that?
The guys doing that drain.
They're actually subbing to PA. Yeah.
So
it's a firm price. Yeah.
Yeah, so we don't. You know, they
could be there by the
end. No.
Not time and materials.
Yeah.
No, and the workers out there are loving it because the boss rented them a beach house. So
they want to stay.
Supposed to be free 3 days has turned into 3 weeks. And they are not in any hurry, it seems. But,
life on the coast.
Life on the coast. And,
but at least we're getting a very thorough job.
Yes.
And they'll find another 5,000 feet of
Yeah, exactly. I think part of the contract was everything, they are to do everything. And that includes things that they missed. So each time they find a drain, dig it up, stick the camera down there, it's like, oh no, this is a whole nother, so here's thousands of feet. And the contract says it's all inclusive. And that's what the engineer, Terry Kessler, when he called yesterday and spoke with us, he said, yeah, they purposely wrote that into the contract just to cover things that they may not know is there, but once it's discovered, they are required to clean it and put a camera in it. So it's really turned out to be an undertaking that they had no idea they were getting into.
Good for us.
So, yeah, it's good for the city. We're getting things documented and getting, they'll be on drawings from now on, so that any work done in the future is going to have...
Well, all the tie-in from the runway next year.
Yeah. And like I mentioned before, the drains, boy, the work they've done in the drains has really made a difference, because there is water coming off of that airport. And we've noticed there's a lot of swampy areas that used to develop out there that seem to be doing a lot better, and the water is getting out of there.
That's so good.
Okay,
that's it. Yes, sir.
Ted?
Okay, well, on the project side, start off with the Part 139 certification, the signage and the markings. There was some delay in getting the signs. They're custom. And talked with the FAA, and they've given us an extension. Rather than go out there in the middle of December or January and do this work, they realized that you're not going to get a good quality product because the painting has to be done at the same time as the signs are put in. And so they went ahead and gave us an extension through all the way through next construction season. However, the contractor's been told we want this done by the end of May before the next project really kind of gets started. So once the weather, and so we've kind of held them up in the sense that rather than come out and do some work and then have to demobilize and then remobilize in the fall, they're just going to come out and do the whole thing. Once the signs are in, they got a break in the weather to do the painting. So that'll happen this spring, I would say. The 1634 rehab has been touched on quite a bit in the data collection. I mean, that's where we are. That's going to be wrapping up. We have a meeting tomorrow to meet the surveyors to go over kind of where the things are, and we hope to have the finished topo map in about 10 days. And then we'll start by the end of the month, the pre-design would be done, and then review that with the FAA, and then start the formal design process. And we're looking to have that done April. Get the final contract documents done so that we can go out in early May to be bid by the end of May. So that's, you know, the nitty gritty, we're maybe a little bit behind because of some of the weather delays we've had on the data collection, but overall we're still tracking well there. Now, there's some discussion between Terry and Kevin Lashaw, and I'm not as familiar with some of the circulars, but apparently a new circular has come out, 150-5300-13A, section 313A, subparagraph 5, that maybe a shed section will be okay, but we don't have an answer on that yet. And that, so that could be a significant, and it really, I don't want, it's not a cost adder or anything else. If anything, I'd say it'd probably be, you know, cheaper. And so, I mean, we're well covered should that become an option. It gives us more flexibility then to evaluate what's going to be best, most cost effective for the airport. And then also, too, I don't know if you may have
brought this. Can I interrupt on that?
Sure.
So that's a shed roof, but that's probably not, the dimensions are still going to come in no matter what.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. I'm waiting to hear if it's even, that's the case, you can consider it, and then there's probably, and by the way, if you do that, then I don't know the dimensions are going to change or not.
Is this because of a revision, or is this something somebody found?
Oh, how do you word this? He just conversationally, talking with Kevin Lashaw, that he mentioned that it may be an opportunity or a possibility, and that he was going to have to do some digging in. But so I don't have an answer, but it's a possibility. And then the compliance person for the FAA. Is it Dearborn? Lisa Dearborn? Lisa Dearborn?
Yeah, she's the...
right.
Eugene.
Right. Yeah. Replacing Rick Schroeder.
Right.
Yep.
Yep. So...
okay. Isn't that the same one we had before?
She's, yeah, they're on two or three year cycles.
I think that's, I didn't mean
Lynn
that.
Deardorff.
Was
Lynn Deardorff.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Dearborn. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Lynn okay. Close enough. Yeah, that was the one that was there.
And according to Kevin, according to the FAA, we've already been through the toughest, roughest inspector in the business.
And he liked what we were doing.
He liked what we were doing, so we're not changing anything we're doing.
He was very complimentary, as a matter of fact, when I called and discussed the possible extension of this Part 139 more signage and so forth, that we can do it, but it's not going to be a, you know, there's a high probability it's not going to be a quality constructed project. And recognizing that improvements are being made and so forth, he was okay with extending the timeline to get a quality constructed project on that one.
Anything else? Okay, PowerPoint.
Okay, Lens. You want me to push the buttons?
This is a surprise.
Well, Lens took some photographs of the box hangers and specifically those hangers that might need repair. So this is
less than 300-foot ceiling.
Yes, that is our new. Yeah.
This is hangar M.
That's my neighbor.
Yeah, and as you can see, we're looking at looking into the lease agreements and whatnot, but there's, you know, significance, obviously, bird hole. Yeah. You've got other little bird holes starting, and then right here, this is more so like mushrooms actually growing off.
Dry rot.
Yeah, so go ahead, and that's just hangar M.
This is still hangar M.
Until, yeah. Mm-hmm. A closer view. You know, I've gone in and we've been hazing the starlings and the swallows in there, and we have not seen a lot of bird activity, so we've been stepping up our part to help you guys out with hangar problems. You can see dry rot setting in, obviously. Mm-hmm. Hangar M. Holes in hangar L. And really, we're combining it because we'd like to get just a letter with these pictures, individual pictures of the hangars sent out to the guys. Cause some of these people, you know, we haven't seen in a few years, like, hey, you might want to come out and check out what's going on, because otherwise it could collapse. And just some, you know, some small issues going on here with this one. That hole, some dry rot on the wood. Some of them are worse off than the other ones. Yeah, it looks good. We'll go to the next picture. We have this whole thing dry rotting in. I mean, I took a front picture of each hangar so we can individually identify what's going on. Hangar E, just, you know, some dry rot paint chips going on there. You got your plate here is rusting apart with. And then you can see there's huge algae buildup creating dry rot here. And I mean, I walked around and got kind of like the worst of the worst. You know, some of these have other little tiny holes on the back that I didn't take picture of. Of course, you know, dry rot sitting in up to the face plate. This is at the bottom of the board crack, dry rotting out and stuff. And that all takes a toll over the years, obviously, and I don't know what it does to, you know, like, you look at Ralph's hangar, which is immaculate and spotless, and it's all drywalled and pristine, and it's in the wrong place. Doesn't look anything like it. So, it's out of place, but...
The guy that built those hangars did a lousy job. Mm-hmm. That's the first problem. He used lousy products. Mm-hmm. Which was the T111.
Yeah, that's that T1.
He didn't use stainless steel. He didn't use cedar. Mm-hmm. He didn't use treated lumber. He faced the shingles the wrong way. I mean, it's just sad. Mine, I've done quite a bit of repair to it.
If you go back a few years when we required painting, you'll see that all that in the previous minutes is really realistic what the problems are.
Yeah. So we're not, I mean, we don't, we know that this is horrible material to be using out on the coast. So, I mean, it's not, we're not trying to bully people into or forcing or demanding. It's just, we would like to send this information out because, like I said, some of these people haven't, we haven't seen in a couple of years at all. We don't know if they realize what the hangar is doing. And it's all pretty, you know, small little tiny holes that eventually will develop into larger issues.
I can tell you that there's other things. For the example, that hangar and a couple of them next to it, you can go around the backside because there's only about, you know, literally, I think, 3 to 5 feet between the buildings. Mm-hmm. And the whole back of it is soft. That old...
the old
fuel siding.
Yeah. So, obviously, he's tried to do some repair, but the birds just went around it.
Yeah.
So.
Now, this particular tenant did come in to me yesterday and said, come springtime, he's replacing all the siding on his entire hangar.
They all have to do that eventually.
They probably will, but at least this one tenant has realized.
Yeah, and he knows about, he's got the dry rot there, and he's pretty up on it because he's out there almost every day, so he knows. But, you know, when the leases are up, if the tenants don't want to renew, then it becomes the city's responsibility to maintain those hangars, and that, you know, definitely don't want to be maintaining a pile of them if it gets to that point. So.
Well, there's something in the lease that says you got to maintain.
Yes, in all the leases.
In all the leases.
Yes.
So I don't, you know, it's all small stuff, but eventually it adds up. There, you know, I think it's the old FBO hangar is definitely, I mean, that thing is horrible. So, you know, just small chips that could just happen when he's closing the door type thing, but it's nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, broke a piece of wood off the top there. But, pretty much.
Every hangar's pretty much got an issue.
Except us.
No.
Except Ralph's, yeah.
Those are just painted. So,
I just paint
he just paints the dry rot.
Well, it puts a nice rubber layer on it.
Yeah, one of the... Yeah, can you go back, I think, 3 slides?
I don't know.
No.
Last viewed?
Maybe previous?
I'm not sure how to...
Okay.
Okay.
Well, there was one there where it had the picture of some dry rot, and you see there's a... was it the drain...
Sorry.
The drain is along, but there's no downpipe. So it just, you know, it pours out everywhere. Oh, and that, yeah. So that's fine. But that, I mean, that just things like that, downpipes. I know that on the, like even on the hangar, I didn't climb on anybody's roof, but I do know that on the hangar next to Dean Sawyer's, the one right in, on the back of his roof, the shingles are all coming off of there. And there's basically... it's blowing off, and then there's no drain over there, so all the water is coming down and splashing on Dean's hangar on that side, causing some rot issues. But then on the other side, there's another hangar where they put a gutter up, but there's no faceplate. They just right into the wood coming out where the faceplate should sit. Hangar keys, I guess is what you would call it. So that, you know, that I think.
That's a.
So I guess kind of what you know, staff would like to do is send some letters out. But what we really need is some support from this committee, because, you know, if they don't want to do it, they will go to the council, and you know, and you'll hear this and. You know, say, hey, you know, can you not have us do this, or can you put it off? Mm-hmm. It's not bad. I mean, they come up a lot of juicy, but we do want to set some kind of a minimum standard, and it'll take some support so that, you know, when we go to the council and say, hey, it's in their agreement. We're trying not to be overly, you know, aggressive on it, but there are some minimum things we would like to see done, and you know, not have the council say don't worry about it.
I think, you know, I don't know what the exact verbiage is, but I'm sure there's something in the lease that says hangars shall be maintained. So you can use that as a lever, but I think mainly, I think sending the pictures out with a reminder, some of these guys, you're right, some of these guys probably haven't even thought about it because they haven't been there. Some of them know about it and are going to get around to it, but quite haven't done it.
Yeah.
And if you just push gently, I think you might get better results, because otherwise you'll get in a pissing contest about, you know, a 6-inch hole is unacceptable, but a 4-inch hole is okay, or what, you know, what constitutes significant damage. Versus
we've been trying to be.
So, but some of those are getting to the point where they are.
And they enlarge.
Yeah, right. And everybody knows that. But now, a lot of, I'd say half a dozen of them out there, maybe some number have put new roofs on in the past couple of 3 years.
Right. Like I didn't climb up on any roofs or anything like that. That might be
good.
But if they're out there to look, you know, you're going to look at your roof and say, well, there's a big hole there under the shingling. You know, that might be something for them to take into consideration.
Where they built in within a few years of each other.
Yeah, those were all, I guess, the story is before I was here, but the story was Mr. Kaminsky built those, and most of them were all built, I guess, it'd be about 15 years ago or something.
So they're all reaching the same.
Yes, and like I say, there wasn't long-term materials put into them to begin with, which was all his fault. On that side, he was defective. But aside from that, it still needs to be done. You'll probably get cooperation out of 90% of the people.
In regards to your comment, Jim, I haven't taken a look at the lease for a long time, but I think, can you not just reference the item that the
yeah, you can, but I mean, and probably you should, says per lease paragraph.
Are you going to break it
X,
down?
You know. But
I mean, besides the pictures.
Kicking somebody sometimes isn't as good as tapping them on the shoulder.
Tapping them on the shoulder, I agree. We did pull the lease out, and that's something we can provide. I mean, just the paragraph, you know, basically, hey, don't forget, here's a picture, here's the paragraph in your lease.
The paragraph in the new lease is somewhat different than in the older leases, but they basically require maintenance.
Okay. I'm sure it's in all of them. So.
Yeah. Okay, work in progress.
Didn't see my picture up
there. Well, yours was the example of here's how
we'd
like to look.
Yeah, that's what we're going to say is go down and look at Ralph's. That's what we want.
That's right.
Well, I'm glad the teenagers are made out of metal.
Yeah. Well, maybe not. They rust a lot quicker than the.
The siding is good, though. I haven't had any complaints compared to what I had in Virginia. So much nicer.
That coated steel stands up pretty well. You know, those back east right on the ocean, been there over 25 years.
Sets up any other
good. Okay, any other comments, Rob?
Nope.
You know, one thing before you end is there's been, apparently there was some discussion after last meeting regarding meeting dates and time. You'll notice that today is Tuesday, you've been meeting on Thursday. What works best?
We used to meet on a Tuesday, did we not?
Tuesday, I think we used to meet on Tuesdays at noon.
Yeah.
I think noon is hard for Mark Watkins.
Well, Tuesday has worked out really. Tuesday is one of the days when Lance and I are both.
Right. It has to be Tuesday or Wednesday.
Yeah, right.
It's better for Tuesday's better for me, but
good. Is it you're not going
to
be on this committee.
Yeah, discuss we're going to have an opening with Ralph.
We are.
He's going to the big show.
No, he can't.
You're being replaced, buddy.
We'll probably start advertising that vacancy pretty soon, just so that maybe
we need a new liaison.
He could be that because Jeff is currently, and Jeff will be.
What was Jim's comments regards to that? He's not here at church.
I think he struggles with Wednesdays generally, and today he just couldn't be here. I'm not sure whether he struggles with Tuesdays all the time. either.
Yeah, when I spoke with them, Tuesday seems to be a consensus from everybody that it was pretty good.
It just has to be after lunch.
Yeah, after lunch.
I've got other work hours.
Right.
Does 2 o'clock work?
I 2 o'clock.
I thought you were retired.
So the third Tuesday at 2 p.m.
Third Tuesday or second Tuesday?
Which do you want it to be?
Well, there might be a conflict with CEC. Because they meet on Tuesdays too. Which
every Tuesday?
No, it's like the third or the fourth Tuesday of the month. It could have been the second.
But it'd be easier to change their meetings. Because it's not a committee that's prescribed by ordinance. Mm-hmm. Okay. But, I mean, we can always meet in here, too, if they're in conference room A, because they are a larger committee.
Actually, I kind of like it in here.
Yeah, this is fun.
Nobody can find us.
We can get a couple more people in here.
We could add chairs. Nice. Mm-hmm. Cool. Okay, so, still third Tuesday?
Where the second or third? What'd you put down?
I didn't put anything down.
Okay. What's the second due to you, Terry?
These days are perfect because I had been coming in on my day off
for the third Tuesdays in November and third.
But
and
what is
December
it? Does the second Tuesday or the third Tuesday work best? Mm. That's what we're trying to figure out.
No preference, no difference to us. So
I would say the second because in November and December, the third Tuesday, you could probably be having people away for holidays.
What's the second Tuesday date in December?
It's the same. The same date it was.
10th.
Oh,
no, I mean 11th. The second Tuesday is the 11th.
Yeah. Second Tuesday is the 11th.
Okay. Yeah. We're going to put down the second Tuesday.
Okay.
That'll be fine.
Because I'd really like to have these two here.
Yeah.
The three of you have done an excellent job. The information we've been receiving since the three of you have been coming has just been absolutely, we've never had this before.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you. We're trying.
Yeah.
It's a big job. Yeah.
Then we'll find out next week this is all better. Yeah. You haven't done anything at all, right?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Is in the pudding.
I've been impressed with what you've done. Yeah. Any other comments? We don't have any public here. Jim, do you have any comments?
Nope. Other than, again, I concur and compliment Lance and Terry. And Chuck, yeah. Don't forget him. He does a great job out there as well.
So we would like to make it be known on the record that Chuck Norman has turned out to be an absolute asset for Lance and I. It doesn't matter what we ask of him, what task, coming in, whatever Chuck performs with a smile, and we just have decided that we really need Chuck. He has become an asset to our team, and mm-hmm. his expertise at doing things has allowed Lance and I to get out of the office, and no matter what aircraft hits that ramp, what request by a customer comes down the line, Chuck is able to handle it, and it has really helped Lance and I be able to do this job. And we could not do it without Chuck right now. Just
yeah,
to get some off hours arrivals. I've seen him out there when I didn't expect anyone to be there. Yeah. Someone's coming in.
Chuck is, I have to say, Chuck is a big part of this team, and we could not be doing this job without him. So we want some recognition.
Yeah.
Chuck's the one guy at the airport that's always happy.
What are you trying to say, Ralph?
Okay.
Meetings adjourned.
Okay, I'm going to turn that